This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. It's our pleasure to be with you every week, and we talk about subjects that we think are important and interesting for all of us who live in the Western New York area here. And we very often try to introduce you to people who are making a difference here in your own hometown, who you may not be familiar with or who we hope you would like to know more about. And that's exactly what we're doing today, because we are honored and pleased to have in the studio talking to us today the very well-known Leroy Caldwell Johnson, who is not only an attorney here in Western New York, but has been a prominent member of the community for, I'm not going to say how many years, Leroy, okay? And because we've known each other all that time, and I'm trying to keep my age a secret, but not too well. And we're going to talk to Leroy, and he is not only an attorney, but he is an artistic manager, and among the different people and important people that he has represented was, of course, his very famous brother, Rick James, who is a proud a former Buffalonian and who we are so proud to call one of our own here in Western New York. Hello there, Leroy, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Your Honor. I hope I can call you Your Honor.
You can. You know you could call me anything, because we've not only been friends and known each other forever, but I mean anything that we can say on the radio.
When they call, you know I could not say no.
Okay, Leroy, I know it was so kind of you, because I know how busy you are. I wanted to start out to take an opportunity to let our listeners know about your background here in Western New York. I mean, how you grew up here and how you became an attorney and how you ended up back here. You know, that whole kind of background story. Would you mind?
No, I wouldn't. I grew up here on the east side. Actually, I grew up in the projects first, in two projects, at Willow Park, and then in the Perry Projects. And I started off Catholic schools. I went to St. Anne's and St. Bridget's, and then up to about third grade. And then I was out of school for almost 4 years. And went to public schools, 53, and
something happened when you were out of school. You had an accident, right? I don't mean
involved
to...
in a. I was hit by a truck when I was young on a bicycle, and
it's so terrible.
Yeah, I was disabled, but I think that was my break in life, to be honest with you, because I was fortunate enough to have a tutor for all those years. So when you get that individual tutorship by someone who was set by the Board of Education, in addition to having your parents work with you individually, you you have a special form of education. So I was fortunate to have that happen, because it was a reflection time, a time where, you know, I reflected on education and on things that I wanted to do. I did a lot of art during that time. That was about from about 10 years old to 13. And after that, I went off to high school. I went to, I went to three high schools, and I've got to give them all some credit, which was Hutch, Tech, Lafayette, and East High School. Each one of them were great high schools at the time. After that, I went off to Canisius and spent my 4 years there, and left school early in my third year. I went to UB for engineering and architecture, industrial design. Graduated, went off to Georgetown. So my early years were, my formative years were basically here in Washington here in Buffalo, up to about the age of 21. And then I went off to Washington, D.C., to Georgetown. So after Georgetown, I spent time with both the city government and federal government, with the D.C. City Council as a legislative assistant, and I did work with the D.C. Board of Education as a hearing examiner and administrative judge with the Rental Accommodations Office. I also was a hearing examiner with the Federal Labor Relations Authority. So I had quite a bit of experience, and after that I left and went off to got married and had a beautiful wife, which I lost, and then I went off with Rick in the early 80s and spent 12 years with my brother managing Rick and the Mary Jane Girls and Process and Stone City Band and Val Young and all the groups underneath our company banner, which was called Mary Jane Productions. And after, in the early 90s, I came back to Buffalo. I believe in 1990, came back to Buffalo and opened up, started practicing law about the time I met you, associated with the law firm of Siegel, Kelleher & Kahn as of counsel, and then formed my own solo practice by myself, which basically I've done since the beginning. I mean, that's kind of...
Can we go back to your comment about you practicing law, but how did you get into... Let's kind of get together with Rick. How did you get into the management or the artistic end of practicing law?
You mean practicing with my brother?
Yes.
Well, I mean, that actually goes back to the early 60s, and my brother and I had done a number of things together. We had promoted shows together, and we were actually best of friends for, I mean, most of all our lives. And so I followed him. He followed me, and it was actually, I didn't know that Rick was going to be a superstar. I think he did. I didn't. But it seemed as though our paths kind of split for a while, and we, you know, I did my law thing. He did his music thing. But at the same time, while he was doing his music, I was doing things related to music and related to entertainment, such as doing concerts and working with various artists, and including working with Rick during all those years, those early years, before he really got big. So once he got big, it was just a natural fit for me to join in with him because of the experience that I had. I ran minority business in D.C. for a couple years, and I gained a lot of experience working with different types of businesses, mostly analyzing business platforms and working with various people who would help businesses and help them develop and help them work through things. So that kind of translated well into working with Rick. And I had that same role when I was with the D.C. City Council, which was I had oversight authority over the budgets of all the agencies in the city. So what I did there was analyze businesses. So at the same, when I went to work with Rick, the first thing I did was to analyze his business and see, you know, what was good, what was bad, what could be improved upon, and just became a natural fit. So I think we kind of worked out well, and we were able to both use our skills to take what he had and what I had to another level.
You know, there's so many of people that don't realize, I mean the general public, what's involved with not only Rick James, who we're talking about, but any star, any group, any person who is wanting to be in the media or in the arts, or in other words, there's so much more behind the scenes that people are not aware of, which is what you're talking about. I guess I want to say the management of it, that There's a lot of, you have to know a lot about business, you have to know marketing, management, all legal of course matters, yeah. And you had to know all of this in order to help Rick become what he was.
Well, that's true, and then you also have to know people. So I mean, and the legal field gives you that kind of background. But having some of the other background in business and in entertainment, that helps also. In addition to that, it was a learning experience. I just didn't walk in and just take over. I mean, it took me a little time to take over, but you just don't walk in on a scene like that. And you really have to have some good people around you. We had a great law firm, which was Gross Schumann, which was involved with us here. And we were basically Buffalo-based in everything we did. A great accountant, Dick Romer. I'm sure you know all those names. Dick Romer, Irv Schumann, Les Greenbaum, on the management and legal side. And on the production side, we had some of the best production people, and they were also from Buffalo. And our musicians were from Buffalo. So, I mean, it just like it takes a community to raise somebody, to have a superstar, and that's what Rick was, You have to have a team. We had over 70 people directly on our payroll, and then there was probably another 50 associates, like, for instance, publishing people, the record company, different agents, booking agents. So when you get to that level, there's a lot that you have to have, and you have to delegate a lot of responsibility and have to know exactly what you're delegating and what results you want back. So that was a learning process, but I had great people who assisted me in my path towards representing Rick.
That's so interesting, and I'm so glad we're bringing this up and talking about that, because the general public, all they see is the famous star, you know, the superstar, Rick James, and without knowing and thinking of all that happens, that has to happen behind the scenes to get him where he is.
Well, that's true, and for Rick himself, Rick had a long road. It wasn't just you make a record and get out there. Rick with a number of different bands, and the most memorable band that he was with was the Minor Birds. And the Minor Birds was composed of some very, very, some future stars. Neil Young, and they had Bruce Palmer, and from Steppenwolf, and he worked with David Crosby, and all these guys when they were young up in Toronto. David Geffen, who was up in Toronto during those times.
Oh, wow.
Have Geffen Records and DreamWorks, Joni Mitchell. So he knew that he could be something, because the guys who he were with when they were young, they all turned out to be icons in the music business. So the question was, when was Rick going to make it? You know, so it took him a little while, but he made it.
Well, it wasn't as simple as the sentence you just said, and we want to talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure our listeners are very interested in the development and the route and the passage and the way it happened for him to become the superstar that he was. I just want to interrupt for a moment. I want to tell our listeners that you're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And today in the studio, we are talking to Leroy Caldwell Johnson, attorney at law, and also a manager of many well-known famous artists, including his brother Rick James. And I thought it would be interesting, well, for me as well as our listeners, to talk about the development about Rick James. Like, what was his influence, and yours too? Somebody in his family was musical, in your family was musical growing up, and how did it develop? How did he develop into the superstar that he, what road did he take to become the superstar that he became?
Well, it's interesting that, my mother was an entertainer, dancer, and a lot of the people that she had around us, we kind of thought of them just as Ma's friends, but they turned out to be some of the most influential people in music and history. Art Blakey and Catherine Dunham, Billy Eckstein, George Lorenz here in town. I mean, the people that she had us around, you were getting Class A of experience from. To us, these were friends of my mother. Malcolm Erni, who's very instrumental, who started the African Culture Center. Everybody added just a little bit, and you take a little piece of everybody, and then ultimately at the end, because Rick's dream and Rick's focus was music, so everything he did was music, starting off with the drum corps and doing all kinds of different things.
Was he talented as a child? Could you see it coming? Was he in talent shows and things like that when he was young?
We walked down the street once, and there was a talent show at Carpenter's Hall, and he said, "I'm going to enter this talent show," and they said that it was closed, and he insisted, and he told them a story that he had already applied, and they must have missed it or something, and he went in and he finished second. With no preparation. Well, he had actually prepared because he had done things, but he had no preparation for that show itself, which showed his aggressiveness and
talent and innate talent.
Yes. So he wasn't afraid. He wasn't afraid of anything. And that's what I think the good artists really are. They're not afraid to show their talent. I mean, it's opportunity, preparation, but at the same time, it's something innate in you that takes you away from everybody else, separates you, and you can kind of tell that. It's when you meet somebody like Rick, the question is, if I don't take this guy, somebody else is going to take him, and I'm going to feel sorry.
Right.
And that's kind of how Rick was. So, you know, as a young person, he always, he could pick up an instrument and play it very easily, learn it very quickly, which, I mean, somebody like myself, I have to sit down and really practice. But Rick seemed to be able to just play most instruments. A lot of people don't know he played harmonica. He played it exceptionally well, played the drums exceptionally well, could play keyboards, bass, piano. You name it, he could play it.
I'm starting to think that he was just born with talent, and that a lot of people, it's not a matter of learning or taking lessons. It's a matter of just being in the genes, I guess, for somebody like Rick.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, I'm sure that, you know, when he wasn't around us, he was probably practicing quickly and to learn something. So you still have to practice, and he was very disciplined and also very focused. Because he could play all the instruments, when he heard everybody together, he could pick out those notes that certain people were missing. And he would stop, for instance, his band in rehearsal, which he would rehearse for months, and then he would say, like, that drum beat is off, that keyboard line is off, that guitar line is off. And you only get that from having been around for a long time and really knowing your stuff.
Let's talk about how he developed, well, starting with Motown, how he developed his style that he eventually had.
Well, I would say that his style was developed before he got to Motown.
Okay.
His style was a mix of rock and roll and funk. And as I told you earlier, he was with the Minor Birds, which had a very similar, well, the Minor Birds were a rock group, a 60s rock group, and he took the elements of that and mixed them with the elements of R&B and came out with a sound that he called punk funk, which was different for the time. Matter of fact, Rick's music still is distinctive, still very different than most others, because of his background in rock. Rick was trying to make it originally as a rock artist, and the doors just weren't open in the way that he thought they might. So he shifted gears and just went into punk funk.
That just shows how talented and versatile he was to come up with that, something so original.
Well, yes, when you've been doing things and then, you know, all of a sudden something clicks and you know you got something. So he walked into Motown with that, and Motown was in agreement. This is something that's different. It was totally different from Motown style, but that was the place that Rick wanted to be. And so that's where he landed. And I also might mention that, you know, Rick was with Motown when he was 16.
He wrote
a hit song for him back then, and we're just he and Stevie were the two young people there. But after that, he didn't stay. That's when he went off to Canada and off to Toronto and joined the Minor Birds.
Was there a turning point in his career? Was there some either one record or one some development or something that really made that? You would say this is what made him the Rick James that he became?
Well, I think you have to look at it in terms of all the things that he did. And I don't want to give you too much because we're doing a movie.
I'm on target. We just got the scoop.
Yeah. So, anyway, you know, just after the Minor Birds, he did some stuff on his own. And that's when he decided to do more of the punk funk. And that was the turning point there. Because immediately, Rick understood things like, you know, when you come out, you want to come out on top at first. You don't want to come out secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And so he waited until he had that that group of songs that were that he felt would be a smash album. And it turned out to be a smash album.
So that was a turning point. I won't tell anybody at all if you just tell us like a little bit about the fact who is making a movie and where and when eventually we will be able to see it.
Well, I'm working with Addison Henderson, who's also from Buffalo. Addison just finished a project, a movie called God, Givers of Death, which. You should be hearing some news about soon on that. And, you know, we're working with various other producers and companies. I can't tell you exactly when, but we're looking at probably, given what's going on now, 2013. And the movie will be basically, it will be a series. Right now we have it's a seven-part series, which will probably expand to something larger than that. But that's what we're doing right now. We've gotten a team together, and we're interviewing various companies right now. So,
what I think is probably the hardest part is going to be finding the star or a person to be Rick James.
That is, we've got our eyes on somebody, but that's the thing because Rick was such a charismatic character and
unique.
You have to have someone who can a powerful to a soft person to, you know, a very demanding person to a very loving person who can perform or at least give the appearance that they're performing. And we've got our eyes on a couple people who fit that description right now. It's just a matter of really locking down those people. That's it.
Tell me about how a little bit we've been so upbeat and we've talked so much about Rick's talent and development and so forth. Tell us about what happened towards the end of his life that was so disappointing and so tragic.
Well, I can just say that there's a lot of pressures on people who are in the entertainment field. And those pressures... the artist really has to bear all of that because your life changes as a star. You no longer can do the things that a normal person can do, and you're being pulled by various people in various directions. There's that drug part that, you know, in that life, there's drug people coming from every different angle at you. And there's groupies coming from various angles and managers coming from various angles, other people who think that they can do better than what you've done when they haven't done anything at all, you know.
Right.
But those are a lot of forces come at you, and some people become weak, and I think Rick was one of them with that. But you can see it's what happened to Rick happened to Michael, happened to Prince. Happened to Marvin Gaye. It happened to just a whole lot. You can, the whole host of stars is the same thing. It's lonely at the top. You think it's glamorous, but it's not as glamorous as you think. You don't know who your friends are. You know, everybody's trying to separate your family from you. It's a tough life. And Rick used to always say to me that you can live normally. Nobody knows who you are. You hide behind the scenes. But, you know, I can't even go to the bathroom. So it's a tough life being a star.
It's not all glamorous as it looks, for sure, right?
Rick, superstar, so you magnify that 10 times, what a star has to go through, what a superstar has to go through. You know, you have no time to yourself.
I wanted to tell our listeners at the end about you, because, you know, not only have we talked about your background and how varied it was and all that you've done in Washington, but now that you're here and back home, I call it, and here in Buffalo, you have returned to painting yourself. I don't know about returned. I don't know what that means, meaning that you did it before, and you are internationally recognized yourself.
Well, I've been painting all my life. At least I started off drawing, and then I painted in college and into law school, and I only kind of slowed down a little bit, stopped when I was on the road, because it was very difficult to get a fix on the time when you're representing a number of groups in that. So I took a hiatus for almost 10 years. And then I got back to the painting, and just fortunate enough to have met the right people and to show my work, and I've shown all over the world. I just finished two world tours where I did Singapore and Korea and London and Italy, and did a lot of South America, New York.
We're so proud that the Johnson family, right, has been right here in Western New York all this time and has stuck to their roots and cared about their roots and represented us to the whole world. And thank you so much for sharing all this information with us. And I just can't wait to see the movie. And thank you again for being with us, Leroy. And we thank you for listening. And we hope you will join us again next week. Same time, same station. Have a really good week. And be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.